fiction?
See, I read objects in fiction as fictional objects.
Oh, okay.
So I was sort of interested in an idea of what the fictional object is.
Fakes. I was interested in fakes.
Fakes.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can write to myself, if you're right. Thanks. You can carry on talking.
Okay. It's funny because in my mind it was not that it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't mind at all what we talk about. I was thinking about, because I read quite a lot of fiction, and I was thinking, maybe it's just because I'm reading Dostoevsky at the moment, and you just think about these objects which are now historical objects. They have such presence, they're like characters. So that was one of the things in here. My other thing is that...
So they've never existed.
They've never existed,
although,
but they're
completely and utterly...
So thousands of millions of people have read about this object and they've got a picture of it in their mind. But the other one bit is for me, because I make performance art, when is a prop?
Yeah.
A prop, and when is it a piece of sculpture or an object? And like the people who work in theatre talk about props all the time. And what's that about? Prop thing. So those were the two threads I had, but I don't mind how we talk about it at all.
I was a scenery and props maker for years. And I used to think about my work as a prop. My work was a prop for a larger event, if you know what I mean.
The making of it.
Or the object was like, I always thought of it not as the central thing, but on the edge of a larger event, if you know, somehow. Like, I make, fake things, or think about my work as things I was making as props.
Why did you like that idea of the things that you were making as props? What was it particularly about the props?
I really liked the feeling that you were making an object, but that object had to be like art directed in a way. You know, it had to be right, it had to be the right style or the right
fit
right to the narrative, to the bigger, to the larger narrative somehow. Have you seen, really lowbrow reference, but Chevy Chase, American Vacation?
No.
Pretty funny but terrible 80s movie. There's a car in that the props model makers have made, and it's just the right amount of horrible, if you know what I mean. It's perfect prop. And I really like that process of making that object fit perfectly into that particular narrative.
Mm.
Feeling like a prop to support a larger event. If you know what I mean.
Support's the word that keeps coming to mind, though. Prop is
like
a thing in one sense. Holding something up. So it's supporting the telling of a narrative, and a way of helping people read the text. But yeah, the question of when does a prop become a sculpture? It's that liminal space again, isn't it? Or the transitional space.
Yeah. What props do you use? Do you use props in your performances?
Well, I do, but I don't... It's like I just did a performance at the weekend, and I was writing my list, and I just wrote the word props down, and it was just about three things.
Right, yeah.
But it's just, I don't think of them as props, more as like, they're just elements to prove or to illustrate in some way.
It's like who serves who, for me, actually. Who serves who is a kind of matter that, I mean, there is a huge difference between object and fiction and object as theatrical props, I feel. And in a way, theatrical props, for me, what comes to my mind is that it actually serves the actor who uses props. And in a way, these theatrical props can tell about the social status of the character, or the it can deliver a certain kind of sign about what kind of situation it's in, or you know, that kind of content it can bring in. And but here, though, that's the person who that I feel theatrical prop, the person, the performer, the actor, actually in a way uses to show the sign of the context of this situation in the playwright. But I know there has been lots of changes, like for example, like UNESCO's the chairs themselves are the signs. Mm-hmm. Without necessarily serving the actors, but because you know the chairs, these old couples kind of invite people, but actually nobody's coming in. But we can feel that by the chairs kind of augmenting the numbers of the chairs.
There's a big problem that directors and actors don't like working in green screen without any context, just a green screen, because they can't do their job, because they need those props to
it's always really weird when you see that, actually, when you see a little bit of a film being made and there's nothing there. And it just gets really surreal sometimes, it's just really awful.
Oh, there's a sticker on the floor that's the whatever, you know, the edge of the cliff, you know what I mean? And they've got, and it's shifting from, as the green screen's getting dearer and dearer and dearer, it's playing that the props builders and makers are now able to compete with that. So directors and actors are asking for props rather than green screen.
Really?
Because the economic, it's balancing out.
Sure, sure.
What people want to use, people want to, actors and directors want the stuff, the real stuff to be in it.
Right. Green screens are getting dearer.
Oh, the compositor,
post-production. Okay, so they can...
They're pricing themselves out, which is amazing.
I mean, high definition must be creating new demands on prop makers.
Actors.
I did some props years ago. I remember trying to make some... Yeah. Figures based on the G.K. Chesterton novels, and having to make them look antique, having to kick them around the studio. So I put a lot of effort and attention to detail, and they went, "Well, they're not going to look real on film."
Slightly kicking around a bit. Period drama's obsession with old things. You know, surely there'd be something new within that
The other thing I'm thinking about is kind of like product placement, the prop that's in there, that's in a film somewhere that is there. Because
there's a really odd shot, lingering odd shot. You suspend yourself for a while, as you're being advertised to.
Someone's written into the narrative.
I was thinking about the fake or the...
Well, you're both interested in that, so why don't we explore that for a bit? When you say fictional object...
I just think in every other conversation I've been thinking of the object in such a solid way.
Yes.
So there just seems a nice relief of the fictional object.
Mm.
And of course object always involves, the projection anyway. So the potential then of what the fictional object can be is just quite nice. Just the potential.
Mm. Have you got an example?
I've just read Solaris. You know, the Stanislav Lem book.
Is that the book that led to the film?
Yeah.
Well, actually, you can get it as audio book. Which actually I didn't really... Which is funny, because I found that quite... It's the first audio book I've ever got, and I find it quite... I found it really difficult, actually, to concentrate, because it's really quite... It's quite dense, actually. The text is quite dense. Mm-hmm. So you really have to concentrate in a way that when you're reading, it's much easier to read dense.
Do you think you're having a break from reading, almost concentrating, because you can just sit there and listen?
Yeah, and it wasn't like that at all. Like, no, it's actually harder. Yeah.
I'll tell you what's really interesting, when that book becomes made a film, how your idea of those objects gets realised by somebody else, and how that matches up between
somebody else's imagination.
And how people constantly talk about being disappointed, don't they? They're always disappointed by the whole time.
So what was it about Solaris that was interesting for you as well?
It's about how he plays with the planet. And actually, it's never really it's a planet, but beyond that, nothing else is known. So all these projections get played out about what this is, from this very intelligent object to the whole realm of the very dumb object.
And the planet is all
because it's all about the explorers that go there and their tension with this object. Because it's always shown to be, so science proves it's something, and then somebody else comes along and proves itself to be something else, and then it proves itself to be something else. And everything, all these fantasies and projections are played around this object that doesn't fit. It never fits into any scenario or scientific scenario. It's just a great book, and it's about this fictional object and how you deal with something, with an object that is beyond the subjective, and the book deals with that. And it's just great. It's just I really would recommend it. It was really good. And why I got the audiobook is just because somebody said, "Oh, just the translation is just a better translation."
It's a better translation on the audio.
Well, originally Stanislaw Lem was Polish, and it was translated into French, and then the French was translated into English. So there's just this and names are different, and monologues, bits that are monologues were then condensed into just narrative. So it's just supposed to be, I mean, an actual translation is always an actual translation, but they're saying something important things get lost in that secondary translation that actually, because it's a newer one, the newer one is only available as an audio. It's just really so fictional objects. It's just sort of.
So it's more. It's more authentic. So the somebody was saying that they felt the audio was more authentic. Is that what they?
No, it was just well. It was the audio was
closer to
the themes and ideas that were in the original
intent.
I don't know where.
No.
I'm sure it's the kind of
authenticity.
I'd just like to ask, is there any difference between objects in fiction and fictional objects? Because I'm not maybe.
Well, objects in fiction, fictional objects. I keep thinking about the realised prom. Physical and it's been used as a tool, and then I keep thinking about the fiction objects in fiction, the description of an object that we can kind of.
Well, the Boltzwood chair that smashed over someone's head in a cowboy film is that a fictional object?
I keep thinking about time machines.
It's not a real object.
Fictional film.
It's a
parody. Like sugar
glass.
Or sugar glass. Yeah.
No. But that's more like a fake, isn't it? And that's more like
fake. Well, yeah.
Fake. I just like the way you scrutinise fakes more than the real thing to try and beat the sort of thing.
When does a copy become a fake?
Yeah.
Is it to do with the idea that with fakery, you're trying to have power, going back to what we're saying earlier, somebody. Yeah. You're trying to manipulate what they think about the situation. So is your Ian Botham sock a real one, or is it one that you got from it's not signed, is it?
No, it's not.
So I'm trusting you that it is a Ian Botham song.
It's it's like if in a way if if you're satisfied, it's kind of enough, isn't it? It's your object.
That's what I was going to say. Actually, I'm just quite happy about the fact that you said that you have one of you both some socks, and that you pinched it, and that you just have that relationship with that object.
It's not on display.
When it gets a bit. Do you wash it or not?
It's just still in there. I've had it like 20 years.
So if you're making a film about Ian Botham, where that's up, would it make it a better film, a more authentic film?
You wouldn't risk damaging the original, would you? You'd have a sock. You'd have the hero sock.
You won't wish damaging it, okay.
You know the key prop is known as the hero prop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't risk the sort of original, if you know what I mean.
So it's damaged, it's not the same sock.
What's interesting for you in this subject?
What is the subject? it's about
objects and props.
I guess how kind of objects might be used in a theatrical, dramatic, performative sense to help tell a story or to influence, to change what people think, and to create some kind of kind of instrumentality of it. In which way could an object be used? What's the function that it is playing in that sense? And what are the kind of ethical dimensions of that? I had this kind of notion of kind of using, not in the poster, but using Augustus Bowles' Theatre of the Oppressed and how that might be used to enable people to, contest ideas and generate kind of preferred future. So it's kind of like the kind of instrumentality about how and the ethical nature of the performer using something to again that kind of power over or power to change, make effect a change. I suppose anything. I mean, I don't come from a performing arts background.
Are there any examples of a prop that has been made which suddenly solidifies the collective idea of what a fictitious object is, and it suddenly becomes. The film of the book's made, and there's a central item that is created that then cements, that becomes quite real in people's minds as that object. That makes sense. Is there an example of that, which I think, where there's a book is written and there's a very central object in that book, the film is made and that object is built, realised, and then that forms itself in the collective kind of consciousness of everybody who's seen that film, and that object is pinned down, if you know what I mean. Is there an example?
Yes,
like Tintin. Herbie,
the disappointment that people seem to Tintin with he never lived up to the idea of this kind of imagination of what it might be.
Which is constant.
It seemed quite particular in that level of dissatisfaction.
We were just wondering what that dissatisfaction is about, that came on earlier.
Right.
So what is that dissatisfaction?
With reproduction?
Well, when something's realised. An optimist when things realised and it's not.
Unfulfilled expectations.
Because, well, my guess would be is because the imagination is in the material world is not limited.
Our imagination is not governed by gravity.
That's all material, isn't it?
Yeah,
or physical material.
That's what's kind of
Yeah, because actually after this I'm going to go and see Master and Margarita, and I've only ever read it.
Yeah.
So it would be really fascinating to see, actually, because I'm already going, I'm already feeling slight anxiety about going. Yeah. Not really, but you know, that anticipation of actually where you would be, and it is that thing of that.
Is it, does it ever happen the other way around, though, where it surpasses what you might expect for expectation?
I have had that experience with the movie, and I can't think which one it was now, but I have had that.
Yeah,
it's been better than the
movie. Yeah, I can't. I mean, I'm sure
it's not very often, but a couple of times.
So I was just thinking about someone designing or bringing in, giving birth to a new object, like something that doesn't exist yet, and the kind of idea that everything we're doing is remixing or mashing up what already exists. Are props and, you know, fictional object, is it the point? Is it not to do with the convergence of one or two kind of concepts? So, you know, the unicorn, you know, is a kind of fictional object or objects in fiction, an amalgam or a composite of two different things. And the other thing I was thinking about was in Gombrich's Art and Illusions, a story about someone drawing a rhinoceros in the, this is in the, I think in the UK or Europe at least, but it's come through kind of like Chinese whispers of someone seeing a rhinoceros in the environment, and someone's drawn this, and this becomes, this is a rhinoceros, is this, and it's not, so the illustration is an illustration of something that.
And does that become, does that sort of then get supplanted into everybody else's consciousness?
I think it does. That's not a rhinoceros. But what
it's
is
quite a powerful position to be in then, to build a prop, to have that, to kind of like snuff out people's imagined objects by this realised.
I saw this incredible film this week by Carl Dreyer. I've never heard of Carl Dreyer. It's a Danish. It must have been, explains Bergman a lot. It came before Bergman. And the film I saw two. The second one was about witchcraft. And it was so unbelievable. It was set up in 1630. It was so gripping. The burning of the witch was so strong, so terrifying. What you got the sense of what it was like to live in those times, and the fear in these women. And somehow the building of this big column of twigs, and then the fall onto it, face down. I'm sure he was accurate in his research. Being put on this stretcher and then I'm falling face down into the fire was just riveting. That's such a powerful image. But I will never see witchcraft the same way again. I just won't. I'm not really rad about it, but it's like really imprinted after that. So I suppose that's an example of an object some fictional.
But that is attached to the power of an image, isn't it? The power of images kind of move us emotionally. Whereas the thing about objects, although films are objects too, but the thing about objects is also not just what they represent, it's what they are in their material form, right? Or how they don't represent, how they fail in terms of representing. That's the kind of disappointing bit, isn't it? How they fail to represent things, but they might be valued as something else too, that they're not just there to repeat things. They have their own kind of narrative. That sounds like a kind of formalism, I suppose, but you know, there is something of value in terms of We're talking about this last one, kind of failure of things. The kind of failure to represent, kind of the inability of objects to kind of really properly represent things. But they do something else. It's maybe far more interesting. To serve our narrative.
I interrupted you.
I think life would be pretty boring if everything lived up to our expectations, wouldn't it? If we could.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't
be bored. It'd be really
old. Just trying to articulate what that other bit is.
Yeah, I'm here because out of circumstance. This morning I was upstairs and my main. The chap that gave the first presentation came up and kind of introduced himself. And, honestly, so I was planning to be somewhere else, but I'm glad I'm here, not what I expected.
But talking about proximities, there's quite interesting show here at the Black Dog Gallery, which is very relevant to the subject because it's about fiction and reality. And I just been just 10 minutes to see this interview by this guy, the bright side fiction, but actually was involved in the intelligent, in the, what is it called? So it's the military structure for...
spying and intelligence agency.
Intelligence agency, stuff like that. So it was very interesting, it was talking about issue ethicality. How within the power structure, the ethicality was just making sure that people they are okay. It's more like making sure that people they are not too emotional. They can deal with the problem. It's more like almost management. But outside is the issue of ethicality. So. Why you doing the research? The research is to produce a new bomb or a new blah blah blah, and he was saying that apparently I understood that he quit that kind of research and he started writing science fiction. So it's like one reality. It's quite interesting how objects are so real they become props, So I like that. The opposite, when something's so real and so effective, then the only way to speak about it is through fiction. So there's a kind of power there, which is interesting to explore, and freedom of speech, because you said how people are like us can reconstitute alternative form of research in this area. It's very difficult, we're saying, because you have to prove where your research comes from. How is your methodology? Mm-hmm. And at some point, go back to the military structure. So you have to reveal that you got that kind of way of doing because you've been part of that. So it's quite different. It's not like you can walk out and just say, "Okay, I'm gonna become an hacker, become an activist." And so it's quite interesting how science fiction in this could play quite interesting role. But somebody like...
Well, in the sense that it allows for things to be just kind of quite difficult things to be communicated or discussed.
Well,
like a mediator, distancing.
Well, it's like if, through reading science fiction, your mind is affected and you start thinking about certain issue. I understood it's like a level of creating consciousness, how you perceive things and how you imagine things. Mm-hmm. So if somebody that actually knows how is the process of constructing a bomb, does it mean as a team and write a science fiction, but it doesn't write about how to but use the same kind of thinking and through it in the book you actually absorb the way of thinking. Then you actually understand how power structures are made. So it's another level, is it?
Would you read, like, because you know...
Did I explain myself? I'm trying to enter.
Is that like Greek kind of theatre, Greek tragedy, the things that like Nietzsche made?
It's not catharsis. It's not the idea of the catharsis. It's actually how...
Is it the attention it demands of the reader when you know the author is talking from a position of reality or authority?
It can be. Yeah. It could be. I mean, if I know what they are...
If you're reading this description of how this thing works from somebody who you potentially could think would know how this thing works or has tested this thing in reality, you're there, right? Your attention is on that object is...
Yeah.
As there's got a foothold in reality.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that necessarily I need to know. If they, I mean, from my point of view, now I'm more interested to read science fiction than the 80s science fiction, because now that's just bullshit, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But now I'm actually interested, we say, oh God, if there are also that actually become writers because they find a kind of point in their career as a scientist and researcher that was very unethical, then I'm still very interested. I'm becoming interested in science fiction. But for kids or people that anybody likes science fiction, I understand that it can be another level of entrance in that, or actually stimulating your imagination and understanding processes, you know, in a different way. I suppose that the guy that writes science fiction, the way this guy writes science fiction is different from a pure writer perspective. It's totally different. It's informed by a different practice. So I think it's quite...
It might be less sort of fantastical. If he has an underlying knowledge of what's possible or what's... It might temper it. I don't know. You might want to read from somebody related back to the world, where gravity is not an issue, if you know what I mean, or where facts are not, you're not weighed down by facts, if you know what I mean. Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think the point is exactly, probably when you read those books, the question is what is really truth, what is not. You're putting yourself in this kind of position, isn't it? Because you want to know. Is this possible? Is this possible? Or is it just fiction? Or is this come from something that was really tested? It's the ambiguity. But this, and this is the point where, you know.
Sounds like a really good, like a marketing dream for publishers, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, remember when Spycatcher came out? Because there was always an element of, like, this happened in that. Yeah. Didn't it sell, like, just stacks and stacks? Because there was, like, a position of authority or knowledge or...
I don't know, it's just, yeah. What's going to happen now? It's just 15 minutes, just feedback.
We're going to get the drinks out, aren't we?
They've got all the recordings.
I know, I didn't write any notes in my one because I just can't talk and write.
Are we doing anything we want to sum up? Or are we there?